You, my friend, are listening to The Happy Hearthstone. This episode is brought to you by listeners just like you. Our Patreon is finally live, and I am so excited to be able to build this show with your help. If you go check it out at patreon.com/thehappyhearthstone, you can check out some of the exclusive perks and rewards you get for financially supporting the show. Stuff like early access to episodes, coaching sessions, and a whole lot more. We'll talk more about it later in the episode, but right now, let's get to it. Hello and welcome to episode 102 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Andrew Brown, and oh my goodness, for this spookiest of spooky Halloween episodes, we have a guy who's not so scary at all. In fact, he's a good friend of the show and a great Hearthstone coach. I'm joined today by Tsukaime. What's going on, man?
Hello, Andrew. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, of course, man. It is our pleasure to have you. So some people might know you on Twitter a little bit as HS Coach and stuff like that. Yeah. But we want to get to know the behind-the-scenes version of this guy. So can you just tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got into gaming and Hearthstone and all that mumbo-jumbo?
All right. Well, going back, I started playing video games when I was, like, six. My dad bought, like, a really, really bad PC, but could play some fun games. Basically never got into card games before Hearthstone, but I started that like the first day of open beta.
Yeah, okay.
Just been playing nonstop since then. Since the past 2 years, I've been doing Hearthstone coaching and gotten pretty good at that. So
why did you think or what stirred you up, I guess, to say I want to coach on this game?
Well, I was helping a lot of people out just on my friends list. They asked me for help, so I just helped them out. Then a friend of mine said, you just ask money for this, and that's kind of how it started.
So go for it. And you have coached a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I've over, like, I'm nearing 2,000 hours by the end of the year.
That's so crazy.
Yeah,
so it's pretty incredible. A little bit of experience over a lot of different metas, a lot of different decks. Do you have any kind of specialty when it comes to helping people with Hearthstone?
Not particularly. Like, I basically just learn every single deck there is to play in Hearthstone. Like, the most random decks, I probably know how to play it.
But, to some level?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. A lot of decks aren't that complicated. Like, you can learn, like, 95% of a deck within, like, a day. And then, like, the pros will work for that final 5%. To get their edge in certain decks, and certain people just never learn anything. So,
yeah, no, that's for sure. So, over the whole time that you've played, since it's been through so many different iterations and stuff, is there a deck that stands out as one that was your favorite or is your favorite?
Yeah, the old Huntlock. Like, I was like, been there since season one, I think. Like, it started in beta already.
Right.
Like the old Huntlock with the Molten Giants before it got nerfed. That was so much fun to play.
It was so crazy because you had to know like how to balance the risk and reward on, you know, life tapping and getting back in the game and stuff like that.
You got punished really badly for making mistakes, but
yes,
if you knew what to do, you could have like an incredible win rate, just like how good decks should be.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you've been having a crazy run lately on Wild, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the current system for Standard, your points won't matter until January.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I just didn't see the point in playing Standard for the last like season or two,
right.
And then the next seasons. So I decided, why not just give Wild a try? Like, I played Wild one season before it, and turned out I was pretty good at it. I got my first actual season of trying. I finished at rank 19 legend.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And right now I'm back up to 28 legend. Going for the top 5 tomorrow.
That's awesome, man. Keep it up. Yeah. What decks have been taking you there, getting you there?
Mostly Razzicus Priest. Like, in Wild, you can still play Reno and stuff with it, so it's like even more powerful. Edmonton Standard.
Absolutely. It's incredible. So other than Reno, are there any other wild cards that kind of
Well, you have more access anything? To board clear, so stuff like Light Bomb and such.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Light Bomb is crazy. I forget that card exists sometimes.
I miss Light Bomb. They should just reprint that card.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's awesome, man.
Freeze doesn't need anything more. But...
Well, I guess for them to be even more insane, but we don't want that quite.
Yeah. I would like to see Priest getting something. Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, we got a new set coming out soon, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But first, Tsukami, I want to know why you're happy today.
Well, Blitzcurrent is around the corner. That's what I'm most happy about. Like, I just love thinking about the new expansion, always. Because, like, I don't know. I sort of wild, like, Hearthstone got really stale in this meta right now. So,
yeah.
Happy to see change coming.
New stuff will always, that'll always spice it up a bit. Do you do you do any like dreaming as far as like or like theory crafting cards and stuff like that?
I haven't yet too much. Still want to get into that at some point because like it would be a lot of fun, but I don't know. It feels pointless to me to do it right now. Like they should just ask like the people what they want from cards rather than designing every single card themselves. Just like that level of interactivity would help the game out a lot. Like
focus groups or something like that.
I mean, not even that. Just like have a competition of people designing a card.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That'd be awesome. Pretty simple idea too.
And yeah, just give it like the reward of designing your card text or something. Like coming to design a logo or whatever.
Yeah,
something really small, but like the community would be all over it, and you would get so many cool card designs. Like, there's a whole subreddit about it already.
Right, I was gonna say people do create their own expansions still, and they come up with some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I wish it just like took more inspiration of that. Like, maybe they do and just don't tell us about it. But
sure,
I don't know. Who knows? Like that communication.
That's fair. Do you have your digital ticket for BlizzCon? Are you going to go with that?
Not yet.
No.
I will be buying it if I know the card is playable.
If the which we'll talk about that a little bit later as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well,
if it's not playable, I just like we'll see, save my money. If it's buy just, some card packs and stuff.
Yeah. That's probably a better investment overall.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy today because I am still riding the high of being at DreamHack Denver. In fact, so much so that we're basically taking two full episodes to talk about everything that there was to talk about with DreamHack Denver. So I thought it was perfect timing with Tsukaime, who's just a very high-level player, that we could talk through the competition side of DreamHack and how I played, my matchups and stuff like that. So we'll be going through all of that in detail today. And then next episode, I'm going to have my buddy Drunken Monk on, who was hanging out with us at DreamHack Denver. We're going to kind of put together a survival guide if you ever go to a DreamHack event or anything like it. So that'll be a lot of fun hanging out with him. Really cool guy. And I'm also thankful that fall weather's here. So it's, Colorado in the fall is just absolutely gorgeous and perfect. It's not too cold, but nice enough you can get outside and not sweat or anything like that. So it's just a nice time of the year,
That sounds great.
Now, you're over in Europe, right?
Yeah, I'm currently in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands. What's weather like over
it's
there?
It's really cold.
It's really
it's
cold.
Really cold today. Yeah.
So you can't even go outside, basically.
No. I mean, I have like a winter coat and I can go outside, but it's like 9 degrees or something.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's really cold.
No, I've always said that if my nose hairs freeze up by just walking out to the car, that's not okay. That can't be.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
You know, it'll get worse.
Yes.
Sadly.
I'm sure.
Before it gets better.
Yeah, it's not even December yet, but sorry, man. and of course, I'm really, really excited because we have finally launched our Patreon, which is huge for the Happy Hearthstone. And you heard a little bit at the top of the show. You're going to hear more at the end. Stay tuned for that. But there's some really exciting stuff going on that that you can, and exclusive rewards that you can get for joining this month. So super excited for that. But we got to get into some news because there's stuff that's already been going on in Hearthstone that we just haven't had of time to talk about. I mean, it is Halloween now, and Hallow's End has taken over Hearthstone. This is really the biggest seasonal event that they've done yet, and it's 2 weeks long. We finished up the first week, and we're going into the second. If you haven't jumped in yet, you're missing out because they have redone Arena from the ground up and are allowing dual classes now. So the way it works is you first get to choose a hero portrait, and then you get to choose from three hero powers from other classes. And then as you're drafting your deck, you'll have neutral options as usual, but your class cards will be offered from the classes of your portrait and the classes of your hero power. It allows for some really OP stuff. You really don't know what to expect when you're out there. So Kame, have you gotten a chance to take this for a run yet?
I have not yet, but I've been watching some streamers play it. That was incredible.
What's the craziest thing you've seen so far?
I was watching a highlight of Crypt, and someone played Innervate, Blood Bloom, into Ultimate Infestation against him, turn one. That was incredible. Like, I was laughing so hard at that. Just like, oh. That's basically like a once-in-a-lifetime thing that thing happens.
Right,
it's
right.
So great.
But I mean, for that one time, it's so worth it.
Yeah. That was incredible.
There's some pretty great options with Rogue, with like Ethereal Peddler. It'll take off two mana from any...
Bruce is your whole deck.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have Rogue with any other class, then that card's just going to do some work for you. But it's been fun. I poked around a little bit. I actually got an 11 win run right out the bats, which I'm not normally a high player on there, but I think I had a Mage portrait with the Warlock Hero Power, which turns out being able to draw every turn and having like Firelands Portal and stuff like that, pretty good, you know. So that was fun. And if you haven't jumped in yet, you want to be sure to do that. The first week is over now, but if you log in between October 31st and November 6th, you'll get a free arena run and two free Frozen Throne packs, which, I mean, it's better than a kick in the pants, right? Never going to complain about free packs.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't play Arena, you can just make your draft and retire the deck, you get like a free pack of that as well.
Yeah, that's not bad. And I actually heard it was confirmed that those free arena tickets never expire. So if you're not into this dual thing, just hold on to it and you can play whenever you want afterwards.
That's great. Might just have to log into Asia for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the big news that that you mentioned a little bit earlier is that BlizzCon is finally happening this week. Big shout out to all the friends of the show who are going to be out there, and especially Con Before the Storm, which is happening on November 2nd. Lots of great podcasts are going to be out there. The Angry Chicken, Villains Chosen, Coin Concede, 1600 Dust, Well Met, and Golden Wisp are part of a panel. And a lot of friends are going to be out there, so definitely go check it out if you're around. And the BlizzCon virtual ticket that we mentioned last time, they finally revealed what the Golden Legendary is. It's going to be a guy named Marion the Fox, who is not actually a fox. And all they've shown us is the artwork. So we don't know if this card is going to be playable, like you mentioned, or anything like that. But this guy's definitely a pirate, right? I mean, it's fair to say.
It looks like it, for sure.
Yeah.
And I've had more information as well about next expansion, including some pirates, so. It's definitely going to be possible.
All of the hints we've been getting are leading towards that. There was also a big announcement about the Invitational, which is going to be very similar to the October Brawl, where they're bringing together some big Hearthstone personalities for this fun, lighthearted competition. And they've divided it up into four teams of three, and they've given each of those teams a name. And those names are the Grime Street Grifters, which is obviously kind of a Mean Streets thing. The Jungle Giants, Ungoro there. The Chillblade Crusaders, that's a Frozen Throne reference. And then the last team is called the Big Time Buccaneers. And come on. It's all leading towards some kind of Booty Bay pirate treasure thing. Is that something that gets you excited, Tsukame, when you think about that next expansion?
I hope so. I just hope they're more control-focused pirates.
Sure.
That would be like a whole new archetype they could develop rather than just making Pirate Warrior good again, because like, I don't think anyone wants that nowadays.
No.
Like, we've already had that.
Yeah.
Too long.
If it was just kind of the same stuff we've already seen, it's not going to be exciting, but I'm with you, and I really believe it's going to be some kind of, just because it's pirates doesn't mean it's just going to be this huge aggressive expansion or anything like that. I think
Yep.
I think we'll see some good mid-range control options too. So,
yeah.
But definitely be watching the panel for BlizzCon called Hearthstone What's Next is on Friday at 1:45 Pacific time. And it's almost guaranteed we're going to find out what the next expansion is during that time. It'll be on Twitch, if even if you don't have that digital digital ticket. But yeah, I bet we'll find out about Marrying the Fox during that time as well, because we're all ready to see it.
Don't you get it before then?
I don't think so. I don't know. They've been so mysterious about it.
Anything about it?
Yeah, they really can do whatever they want. I guess that's just my thought that maybe.
Yeah,
they'll,
for sure.
Yeah, that'll be good stuff. All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into our main topic, which is the DreamHack Denver Grand Prix recap. If you weren't able to check this out, it was a big event on Twitch and everything. This is the same style tournament that they do for every DreamHack, which is an open tournament, meaning anyone who comes can enter. You don't have to be a professional player. It's not an invitational. It's anybody can just jump in and be a part of it. And it's a best of five, last hero standing format, which is a little bit different than other formats that you've seen. In last hero standing, when you lose with a deck, you can't use that deck anymore in the match. So it lends itself to making you want to play decks that really snowball and win a lot of different matchups. And you'd bring four decks with you, and in each matchup, your opponent would choose one of your classes to ban. And, you know, I think I said on the show, at least on other shows that I guested on and stuff, that I was not going to compete. And it wasn't until Wednesday before the tournament that I think I was standing around at work thinking about it and thought, you know what, if I lose every match, I think I'm okay with that. Like, I'd be a little bit bummed, but I wouldn't think less of myself. So I thought, well, at that point, what do I have to lose? So let me jump in and see what happens. And in a few days, I threw together some strategies and decks, and had some super help from my friends Appa and Cinder, and just really last minute threw together some stuff, and then ended up doing pretty well. So let's talk about some other highlights from the tournament that don't involve me, though. Were you able to watch any of this tournament, Tsukaime?
Yeah, I've watched quite a few of the matches. Obviously all of them, because like the time zones were really bad for Europe, but
and there's too many.
There were a lot of exciting matches.
What were some highlights that stood out to you?
I think he was the first person to go undefeated, and he played like incredibly good.
Right, and that's just incredible for. And his name is Ike. He's part of the Gamer Sensei team,
yeah.
And for him to not lose a match. It's really disgusting. He lost games within matches, but no one did that. I don't know if it's ever been done before, DreamHack.
No,
I know
never.
At Atlanta, when Dr. Jikiniki won, he had lost, I think, one match or something like that. But I don't know. To me, his streak just kind of proves that, I don't know, RNG is always an element to this game, but you can be really good and get rewarded for playing perfectly, you know,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's good stuff. Another big thing that came out of that match was a kid who made it in the top 16. He was 12 years old, and he goes by MTG Kid. I'm pretty sure that I sat next to him in the very first round, so we weren't competing against each other, but I remember seeing this kid and totally judging a book by its cover. You know, you see a child who comes to a game or a high level competition and think, oh, okay, that'll be an easy match, but this guy did way better than me, you know, and losing to Monsanto in the top 16, which is a really high matchup too. So this guy should be super proud. I hope that he's homeschooled, because I don't know how you're this good at the game and going to school.
His family's like crazy. Like his brother and parents, I think his brother, like and his parents, they're all like super big in Magic the Gathering. They're like all really high level players there.
So that's pretty cool, and they're probably able to train a lot from that,
yeah,
I guess.
For sure.
But it was really a big note that you just can't ever judge an opponent at any point through a match, right? Doesn't matter if they started off poorly. It doesn't matter if they look like they're not a professional player. You just treat it like it's high level, like they're the reigning world champion or something, and then go from there, because the dude definitely did a great job. And the only other thing I wanted to mention here that was a big highlight for me was noticing all of the pros that didn't make it. Even with a top 16, there were more than 16 professional level Hearthstone players at this tournament. And I'm sure each of those guys could tell you why they didn't make it, or they just had a bad weekend, you know, but it was a testament that you really can get shaken, thrown. You can choose poorly. You can be dedicating so much of your life to this game and then have an off weekend and lose out on a really big competition. And honestly, it made me just really glad I'm not a pro player, because I don't think I could take that kind of pressure every single tournament.
I mean, it depends on how many chances you get, right? Like, I don't think people are too worried about the DreamHack, because, like, most of the DreamHacks are just, like, played for fun. Like, they have a great prize pool structure, but, like, the real pro players that actually spend too much time on the game, they all go for, like, the HET tournaments, which you need to spend an unreal amount of time for. But, like, if you have your off weekend on those days, then you just feel devastated because you just lost basically half a year of your life. Like, that's the pressure I can't deal with. Like, that would actually be horrible. Like,
so even for something like this, if this is more of a fun tournament for them, it's just crazy. It was fun to meet a bunch of people. I met Ray C. I met Cora. I met Sir Slim, Captain Crunch, a few other players. It was a lot of fun to just see them interacting with each other, and it's definitely a scene. We'll talk more about it in the next episode about wandering and meeting people and stuff like that. But it was really cool to just kind of feel the vibe of everybody loves this game and are really into these matchups and stuff like that. So let's go into talking about my results and everything here. So the way that the Grand Prix goes is it's 9 different rounds, and each round you're matched up with somebody who has the same record as you. So everyone starts off kind of blind the first round, but then from there, you know, second match, if you won the first one, you'll be matched up with someone else who won that first one. And it goes through all those rounds as best they can with somebody who has the same record. And then after those 9 rounds, they take the top 16 players and put them in a single elimination bracket. And I ended up going 6-3, which put me one win away from making it into the top 16, which is pretty crazy. I'm really proud that I was able to get there. My losses were against some really phenomenal players, so I learned a ton from going up against them. And we'll talk a little bit more in depth about what those were and everything. But the big first question you kind of have to ask as you're entering into any tournament, whether it's high stakes or low stakes, is what are you going to bring? Which decks are you going to bring? And there's a ton of different strategies that you can go around with that. I decided to pick 3 decks that were really good and proven, which are Temper Rogue, Razakas Priest, and Jade Druid. And the 4th deck that I wanted to bring was one that I know really well, was able to hit Legend with, and Counters Druid, which I know is really strong, and I wasn't going to go after that as a ban. And so Murloc Paladin was the 4th deck to really go around that. So the strategy was to ban Rogue, because that deck is just such a high win rate. Ended up being the most winning deck of that whole weekend tournament, which is pretty... what do you think about the state of Rogue
the
right
percentage
now?
Win rate, I mean, you get by drawing Kellos Heth on turn 2 is just way too big right now.
Right.
Like, I think it's currently, on the average deck, a 17% win rate difference by drawing it on turn 2 or not.
Wow.
Like, that's just way too much for a game like Hearthstone. Like,
yeah. For it all to
depend
pretty
sure
on
it's
that
higher
one card
than, like, any card in the game difference to have in your starting hand, basically. Like,
yeah,
it's way too much.
Yeah, that's
but, like, I'm not even sure how you're supposed to change it. Like,
sure.
Like, I don't know. Nothing to do.
It's really interesting to me how the deck can still perform really well without Kellos Heth, too.
I think there was one player that brought it with Glacka Crawlers instead of Prince Kellos Heth. That was like,
really?
Yeah, that was like the smartest thing I've seen someone do. Like, I don't think he did well. Huh. I like the decision to do that.
It's a cool idea,
like,
though,
if
for
you
sure.
Just like, it actually helps a lot in a mirror match. It makes your auto matchups a bit worse, but having Galactic Crawlers against like everyone's pirate lineup was really good in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, the decks that are running it right now are Tempo Rogue, Token Shaman, what else am I forgetting? Yeah. Warlock Zoo.
Aggro Druid.
So Aggro Druid. So it's a pretty safe tech card that you're gonna be able to get
definitely
that in. That's cool. Well, my three losses were to some names that most of you may not know. I didn't know them going into the weekend, but these guys were really quite accomplished. My first two matchups were against a guy named Squid and another named ESO Galacta, and both of them had qualified for the Summer Championship of the HCT, which is a pretty good accomplishment, I gotta say. Tsukame, you know more about this than I do. What does it take to qualify for those competitions?
To get into HCT, you have to get, like, pretty sure, it depends if you're EU or NA. Like, it really makes a big difference.
Sure.
Like, in EU, currently, you have to get, like, on average, top 25 every month. And then on top of that, win an Open Cup. Or, like, finish top 2 or something. It's, like, actually really incredible, the art. And then, like, you actually also have to play, like, the tournaments and stuff that are there. Because, like, they change your points needed. Like, for NA, it's a lot easier. Because, like, the points is, like, 9 or 8 lower. Which is, like, 2 end of season.
For the tournaments?
No, to get into HCT. It's, like...
Oh, okay. You need that many. Gotcha.
It's like that many less. Like, you have to finish 2 times less on if you're a US player. So, that's definitely a benefit, but... Basically, every person that gets into ACT is really good at the game and spends a lot of time preparing for it.
Yeah. They have not just stumbled there accidentally.
They put in, for real. Probably thousands of hours into the game.
I can't even imagine. And then the third loss that I had was to a guy named Insom, who was in the top 4 at DreamHack Montreal, which really good... anybody who makes top 16 has got to be super proud of that. But top 4 is just disgusting. Honestly, like I said before, these losses I took in stride, because these are really high level players. I was really proud. I was able to at least hold my own against them. You know, none of them were sweeps, or run over. We'll talk a little bit about kind of how they went down and maybe what I could have done differently and what I can learn from them. So, we'll talk a little bit about Squid. Squid was a really cool guy. He was a friend of Ben's, from the Dad Legend community. I think he's part of the Kansas City area, those firesides and stuff. So got to know him a little bit and hang out with him, after our match. And, Squid brought Druid, Priest, Rogue, and Warlock. And that's all you know going into it. You don't necessarily know their deck
list. Unless deckless, right? On DreamHack?
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, people kind of learn as you play, and you find out. And then the top 16, they would have about 10 minutes before the match that they could study their opponent's deck lists and stuff. But for the Grand Prix, it was closed. You just know the classes, and you can kind of guess for the most part, but there were some sneaky things as well as we'll talk about here. So he brought Druid, Priest, Rogue, and Warlock. And so Rogue was my first ban, so that was an easy choice there. And then he banned my Priest, so it was my my Paladin, Druid, and Rogue against him. So first match was his Warlock Zoo against my Tempo Rogue. I was ahead for most of that match. I think I drew really well at the beginning. And because I had so much on board, he had to risk playing a Doom Guard around turn 5 or 6. And from that, he discarded his Blood Reaver Gul'dan, which is kind of the writing on the wall. That's the only way he could have come. Yeah, it does not feel good ever. And that was probably the only way he could have brought it back, is by getting some late game revival. So I took that one, but then he queued up his Druid, and I thought everyone was going to bring J Druid, Squid brought an aggro Druid, which was just awful to play against. It was extremely deadly, and he ended up sweeping against my Tempo Rogue, J Druid, and Murloc Paladin pretty quick. What do you think about the aggro Druid in a lineup like this, man?
I think aggro Druid, mostly for the round of 16, is really good, or before the round of 16 is really good. Like, if you don't know what your opponent is playing, then you assume it's, like, the most popular version of a deck. You make so many mistakes with your mulligan, which aggro Druid punishes just really badly. So,
yeah, especially if they draw well, which... Yeah. Yeah, so he... And the big bummer was in the very last matchup against my Murloc Paladin, he had one copy of Hungry Crab in that aggro Druid, and he had it in his opening hand. So that game was... Yeah, that was a bummer. And he admitted it, you know, it was a smart add-in and ended up paying off well for him. So the big thing I learned from that is that Murloc Paladin is a pretty good matchup against Aggro Druid, and I probably should have queued that before going to, can't remember what I played first, my Jade Druid. I thought that maybe if I ramped quickly, I could, or gotten my Spreading Plagues, I could have played against him, but...
Yeah, I mean, depends on how good your draw is with Murloc Paladin, for sure. And, like, whether or not you're going first or second, that makes a big difference as well.
Like, absolutely.
Being able to have the first minion in, like, tempo matchups is really important.
Yes, especially when you're both trying to establish the board so quickly. If he hadn't had Hungry Crab, I may have had a shot that match.
Maybe.
But, yeah. But his draws were really good. It was a great matchup, and I was thankful for that. And that was my very first match. It was kind of a bummer to start off with a loss, but I went into my second match, which was against ESO Glockta, who, same thing, was a loss as well. This guy, again, was a summer finalist for Americas, and he's a free-to-play player, which is pretty impressive for him to, you know, build up that collection and stuff. He later played Just Saiyan on stream and lost that match, but really good guy, really accomplished and super, super nice. So he brought Druid, Priest, Shaman, and Rogue, which seemed like a pretty typical match, lineup on Surface, and I think it pretty much was. And then I decided to ban his Rogue as my strategy was, and he banned my Druid. So he started with his J Druid and really just crushed my Tempo Rogue and Murzakis Priest. He drew all his ramp in both of those. And I realized at one point that I wasn't thinking about how to beat J Druid. I was really only thinking about what my deck wanted to do. Tsukami, what do you think about the balance of that? I know you want to kind of impose the questions rather than keep trying to react to your opponent. But how do you balance playing your deck and trying to crush your opponent at the same time?
I mean, it depends on what your win condition actually is, right? Like, certain decks, you just have to get your win condition off to win.
Right. Like the Razakas Priest.
Yeah, like Razakas Priest in, like, most matchups. Like, if you're against, like, something like Aggro Druid, you can just stop their win condition by clearing a board every time, and you'll just win eventually. Like, that's just stuff you need to know before you go into the matchup, like, what your goal is to win.
With Jade Druid, is it just being aggressive enough to not let them get to the end game?
Yeah, like, I mean, you win eventually with Jade Druid, and, like, nearly every matchup.
Right.
Unless they play a Skulking Ghast, but if they play, you know, different discussion.
Right.
Right.
That's totally fair.
You just win eventually, so, like, the only thing you want to do is just to not die in a lot of your matchups.
Get them before. Yeah. That's good. Well, then after that, I was able to bring it back with my Murloc Paladin and get aggressive with that. So I beat his Jade Druid, I beat his Token Shaman, and then it all came down to his Razakas Priest against my Murloc Paladin. And this match came to a really tough decision that, I don't know, Tsukami, you're so accomplished at this game, you might see this as an easy one, but it was tough for me in the moment. I had an Ashbringer in hand from my Tyrion, and he had Lyra on the board at 3 attack and 10 health because he got a Divine Spirit off of it. And it was really hard because I know that Lyra just has some insane combo potential, but I had him down to 6 health if I just went face with everything. I think I had 4 or 5 minions on board, and I thought that I could close it out next turn if I just got aggressive and hope that he wouldn't get what he needed off of Lyra. Maybe he gets a mind control or something that he just can't use. Well, he ended up getting like 20 cards or so off of her that next turn, just dominated the board, and really realized that was a tough one for me.
It's a hard decision to make, right, in the moment. Like, looking back, it's always easier to make a decision because you just have way more time to think about it. Like, from what you said, it's hard to say what was better. Like, if you only had Ashbringer, I might have traded, because, like, it's unlikely, or it's not guaranteed you actually kill him next turn. Right? If you can clear your board, then you wouldn't actually win the game. So, I don't know, it's hard to say. Like, it might have been correct to go phase, depending on how far behind or ahead you were, or if you were.
Yeah. And like you said, it's always easier in retrospect.
Like, hindsight is so much easier to say, for sure.
if I had known for sure that he was going to get a bunch of low-cost spells, I probably would have taken out Lyra. Yeah. But, you know, those matchups can sometimes come down to one critical thing, yeah. And I learned from that. Lyra is pretty crazy, so don't underestimate her.
It might have been correct. Like, you don't know. Even though you lost, yeah, you might have still made the better play overall.
Yeah.
Just got
I think lucky. That's a huge part of kind of the mindset with tournament play and ladder, too, is that you can do everything right and still lose, yeah. You know? And you just have to be okay with that. You can't internalize it as I'm a bad player or, you know, stuff like that, because it just doesn't help you to bounce back and do well.
Yep, definitely.
It's good. The last, so I went a couple matches after that. I think I swept a player. I had somebody not show, which you win if that's the case. Okay with that. And I think my and my last match for that day was against Insom. Who I mentioned, top four DreamHack Montreal. He brought Paladin, Druid, Mage, and Warlock. So here's your Mage, Shikame. You were saying in the pre-show.
I like Mage a lot.
You think Mage is... Yeah. And I banned his Warlock. He banned my Rogue. So we started off with his Big Druid, which beat my J Druid.
Yeah, definitely.
His Big Druid is pretty good.
That's definitely a great matchup for him.
Yeah, J Druid just doesn't have the removal you need, and just keep playing it out those crazy guys, big guys. So I finally learned from my past two losses that when you're up against Druid, it's a good thing to queue up some Murloc Pally. Yeah. So I did that and was able to beat him pretty quickly with a good hand. Now he came back. He was playing a Murloc Paladin, but he was playing a Corpse Taker version with Storm Watcher in it. And I didn't anticipate that at a high level play, but that ended up being a very strong deck, and I don't know if it was the matchups or maybe that I just wasn't ready for it, but he ended up sweeping my Paladin and Priest and winning that one. Have you had much a chance to play that deck or see it?
No, I haven't been able to play it yet, but I see it all the time, like people posting it on Twitter. It's like, hey, I just got rank 10 legend with Murloc Paladin with Corpse Takers. This deck totally isn't bad.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's it turns still pretty out inconsistent, but I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I haven't had much chance to play it. I'm interested to get some more time with it and kind of just see how it goes. But you get that Corpse Taker on turn four with Wind Fury, Divine Shield, Taunt, and Lifesteal.
You get it a lot.
If you can't,
it's really good.
Yeah. And if your opponent doesn't have an answer for it, it's just crazy. So, I remember feeling pretty fatigued because this was the last match of the day and it was pretty late. I definitely think I could have played this one better because I wasn't thinking much about this specific deck. And maybe if it had happened earlier or something, those Corpse Takers are just brutal, honestly, especially when you can build an army of Murlocs behind them.
Yeah.
So that was pretty crazy. But those were the losses. The next day, there were three more rounds and ended up winning each of those. Some awesome opponents, really cool guys, ended up being friends with most of them. And they were really close, too. I don't think I swept any of those. So that was a hard last day. But ending where I did, especially with not a ton of prep, just super humbled to get to do that. And really want to encourage any of you guys, if you've ever thought about competing at a higher level, if you think that you're better than maybe your ladder play would tell you, go do an open tournament online. My friends at 1600 Dust just did a open this past weekend that was free. There's a ton of other tournaments that are for fun or for small cash prizes, packs, whatever. Go try it out. Go see what happens and have a good time, because it really is a different kind of feel to the whole competition side of Hearthstone.
For sure. I'm going to DreamHack Winter in November.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be so much fun.
Oh, yeah. What part of what part of Europe is that in again?
In Sweden.
It's in Sweden, because DreamHack is from there, aren't
they?
Dude, that's awesome. Well, we'll definitely be cheering you on, man. When is that? December, January?
Yeah, it's like December 1 to 4. So.
Okay.
It's gonna be a
lot of definitely
fun.
We'll definitely be tweeting out our support, man. Want to see you do well at that.
I'm ready to go Zero Tree.
No pressure.
And just explore the city.
That's right. Just have fun with it, man. It'll be good. Well, cool. Well, we'll be back on the next episode. Again, Drunken Monk and I will be talking about all the other sides of just how to have a good time with an event like this. It honestly was really, really crazy, and want to help you guys however we can with, you know, events, tournaments, and stuff like that to get the most out of your experience. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, though, Tsukaipe has put together some tricks and treats for us. You want to tell us a little bit about this?
First tip is life is a resource. Not every minion has to be removed right away. It's a mistake I see a lot of people make when they're playing Grazika's Priest nowadays. So, like, they see one minion on the board, then all of a sudden they use Dragon Fire Potion, even though they're at, like, 30 health. And it's just, like, it ends up hurting them basically always, because it's just super unnecessary, right? Like, you only need one HP to be alive, so keep that in mind. Like, most of the time, if you're not going to die to a amount of minions, then you should probably just leave them on the board. Hope it gets better
Think of a really simple example. If you're going up against a Jade Druid and they Jade Idol on turn one, your turn one should not be coin ping that 1/1 because it's a 1/1. They're not going to do anything. Yeah, don't holy smite it. Just put something on the board that'll actually help you instead.
Exactly.
That's a good word, man.
And then the second tip is take your time to decide what you do. You always have a lot more options, and you have 70 seconds per turn for a reason, so make use of it if you have to. Like, I always see people just rush out their decisions and just, like, start playing cards and then realize how bad it was. And, you know, even if it's an irrelevant ladder game, like, just take the few seconds to figure out what you actually want to do this turn. And then do it.
Yeah.
You have the time for it.
Do you have a process for how you kind of think through different lines of play, or do you just kind of take it as it is each time?
I mean, a lot of the time I just end up playing on intuition, because, like, it's like my biggest fault is that I autopilot way too much. So
sure.
Like, I don't know.
No, that's good. And especially, like, when I was playing at DreamHack, I was recommended to just put my hands under my legs and just sit on them to kind of force myself to really think through, okay, what's next turn going to look like? You know, what could I draw? What is he potentially going to play? And stuff like that. So that's always going to help you play your best, I think.
That's a great tip. Just sitting your hands.
Physically stop yourself. You don't have the option.
I like that.
It's great.
Maybe you should do that.
Yeah. Go for it, man. Try it. See what happens.
Right. And then the last tip is always count how much damage you have for each turn. If you can go phase with something, you might be able to set up lethal for the next turn. How was it?
That's good, man. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be caught realizing that you had lethal the whole time. I remember I had to actually apologize to one of my opponents at DreamHack because it was two turns later and I think I realized I had lethal. And I just wanted to let him know, like, I wasn't trying to be MU or anything. I just I wasn't doing this. I wasn't counting how much I had. So
happens to the best of us. Might have missed lethal twice yesterday.
It has to happen every now and then. Sometimes you get so consumed in the game you just forget about simple stuff like this.
Yeah, you're spending so much time trying to figure out how to clear the board, you just don't realize you can just kill him. Like,
oh wait a minute, I don't have to kill him. That's funny, man. I know that you see a lot of people with your coaching and everything like that. Is there anything like that you would say to people who maybe they feel stuck at the game? Maybe they've reached, you know, they keep getting rank 15 and they just can't bust out of that or something. Like, anything you would say to either encourage or maybe change your perspective or anything?
I think a lot of people just need to realize that they need to stick to one deck and actually learn it. Like, if you're stuck at rank 15 with a tier 1 or tier 2 deck, you probably don't know enough about it. Like, I have a lot of people tell me that they know everything about the deck, and then when they start playing, they have no idea what they're doing. To say it harshly, right? Sure. It's like, if you lose that much that you're stuck at rank 15, just, like, actually just go back and look at a replay of the game. And just, like, objectively think what you could have done differently, and if that would have been better.
Yeah.
And you actually improve, and most definitely go up in ranks eventually.
That's good. And how can they kind of learn how to pilot the deck if they, I don't know, maybe they feel like they're really good at it, but they just keep losing?
I mean, the best way to do it is just, like, look up some YouTuber, right? Like, basically every streamer just posts games they've played. Like, I know Gara does it. Mm-hmm. I really like his videos nowadays.
Yeah.
Gara Shaman. Not sure if people know him. Mm-hmm. He plays for Tempo.
Yeah, he's great.
He just, mm-hmm. like, puts games he played on his from his stream on YouTube. Like, you can just pause every turn, like, think what you would do in his situation, and then see what he does mm-hmm. and what his reasoning is for it. It's, like, an incredible way to learn the game.
Absolutely. I remember, I think I was talking to Ray C at DreamHack Denver. He was talking about how he'll watch, you know, Asmodai or Amnesiac, and he'll be learning from them. So even the pros are doing this, where they're trying to yeah. watch what each other are learning about decks, doing differently and stuff. So if they're doing it, then certainly the common people like us should be doing it
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, for sure. It doesn't take much either. Like, you don't have to do it for every yeah, single yeah. turn either. Like, it's like when you're looking at a stream, just like, think about what would you do in this situation. Mm-hmm. And see what they do differently. Or if they do the same thing, then you're good.
Yeah. It's good stuff, man. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. It's a little bit of a treat for us to get to graph from all the experience you've got.
No problem. Happy to help.
Nice. Well, our community section is a little bit lacking this week. We didn't have any questions come in, no iTunes reviews, so please do those. Please help out the show. It's a simple way to just throw in your thoughts, your questions, your ideas, and certainly on iTunes to let people know what you like about the show and stuff like that. But it certainly wouldn't be an episode of Happy Hearthstone if we didn't have a card of the week. And Tsukaime, I know that you have been looking forward to this moment all your life, right?
Clearly. For sure.
So tell us what's going on, man. Bring us in the right way.
Well, the card of the week is Spirit Lash. Mm-hmm. We've got Spirit. Yes, we do. We've got Spirit stolen from you. I think Spirit Lash is like the single but most underrated card in Hearthstone currently. The amount of times that card has just saved me, like, over and over again in nearly every game I play. It's incredible. Like, the synergy with Spellpower and Prophet Velen and stuff, it's like the most versatile card in Hearthstone right now. And I don't think people are giving it enough credit for what it actually does. So,
Why do you think it's so underrated?
I don't think people realize just actually how often it helps them out. If they just see it as like, oh, well, this clears the board, that's pretty good. Right, like, they don't realize it heals them for 12 against aggro. Like, they don't realize it might heal them for 20 good. If they play it with Prophet Velen and, like, clear your opponent's board. Like, it just single-handedly wins you a lot of your matchups that you normally just have no reason to win. Like, having a clear on turn 3 or 4 that Priest just doesn't have is really important against aggro. Without it, like, nearly every matchup would just be worse.
Is it one that's like a must keep in your mulligan if you're playing against what you think is aggro?
I don't know. I've started keeping it more and more, but usually just like still just want to go for your Doomsayer instead. Right? Like nearly every deck plays Doomsayer, and just like Doomsayer on turn 2 is still better than Spirit Lash, but Spirit Lash is still always useful. So yeah. I'm not completely convinced about it yet. Like, it's not kept enough, I think, in a lot of matchups, but like, on ladder, you're mostly just guessing what your opponent is playing, so, and it feels really wrong to keep it, because, like, the card really isn't that great against control. Like, I'll admit that. Like,
sure.
As much as it's going to help you out from time to time, it's not made for control. It might still help you out a lot of the time, right? Like, still a good card of Auctioneer. It's still a good card if your opponent has minions on the board. Still does way more than an average card for 2 mana does, so.
Mm-hmm. When I've had several experiences where I can clear the board with Bloodmage Thalnos, and I'm going to draw a card from it too, which a lot of times is all Bloodmage Thalnos is good for anyway.
Exactly.
So
you get to kill your opponent's Loot Hoarder if you Potion of Madness it.
Yes.
Like, denying the card draws such a great feeling.
and you have to have that, because it really is a combo deck. Like, it's hard, it seems.
I really like it.
Good choice. Well, we're going to close out the show, and I want to do so by telling you guys and reminding you that you are the Happy Hearthstone. You see, this podcast exists for you, and it's sustained by you, and there's so many great ways to support what we're doing here. And I want to ask you, if this is one of your favorite podcasts or you listen to every episode, just to consider how you can support the show. And one of the biggest ways right now is to jump over to our Patreon, which is now live at patreon.com/thehappyhearthstone. And starting at just $1 a month, you can help support the show, allow us to do even more. And there are some cool exclusive rewards that are on there, stuff like shout outs, early access to episodes, Hearthstone coaching. Like, there's just a ton of different stuff on there. I've also added in some goals that are extremely exciting because we'll be able to build out the show with certain segments that have been long requested. And one thing that's actually been, you guys have been asking about from long before I was a part of this show, which is having consistent weekly episodes. And so we can be a part of that by making the Patreon happen. Go check it out. Consider how you can be a part of what we're doing. Like I mentioned, there's some other great free ways to support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play, whatever device that you use. You can also come hang out with us at our Google Plus community, which is just thriving and bumping. People always talking about decks and stuff on there. You can follow me on Twitter at AndrewIsLiving or follow the show at TheHappyHS. Been having a lot of fun pushing out some funny stuff through there. So if you're not following the show's Twitter, you're really missing out. Also, you can email The Happy Hearthstone at TheHappyHearthstone@gmail.com. Let me know if you want to be a guest on the show like Tsukaime did so long ago. You've been super patient with me as well, man. So I'm really thankful we were finally able to, to make that happen. And also, Blizzard just added groups to their class. And we have a Happy Hearthstone group. So would love to have you guys come and join that. You can find people to play with right in the Battle.net client. You can share decks. The link for that is in our show notes. And you can find all of that at thehappyhearthstone.podbean.com. That's our new website. So Tsukaime, for people who want to get connected with you or who want to get some coaching sessions from you, which I've personally benefited from, where can they get connected and find out what you're up to?
You're probably best off just following me on Twitter at HSCoaches. Mm-hmm. I basically post everything I do on there, from like my YouTube content to coaching lessons, deck lists, whatever. And I have a question to the audience that is listening.
Yeah.
What is your favorite deck of all time you've played? Let us know on Twitter. We'd love to hear from
you. I think that's great. Yeah, tag him, HS Coach. Tag the show at The Happy HS. What's your favorite deck of all time? Your answer was Handlock.
Handlock.
My answer... Handlock. I don't know what it is. I tell you what, I'll tweet it out at some point during the week. I got to think about that a little bit more.
Sounds good.
I think that's great, man. So definitely go get connected and see how he's just shooting up. Dude, is rank one going to happen? You going to make it?
I don't think so this month. Like, I know the current rank one. Like, he's like 8 wins into rank one right now.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's basically impossible unless I win 20 games in a row from where I'm at
but
right
top
now.
Top 20? So.
I'm aiming for top five. That's my goal.
Goodness, dude, that would still be really, really good.
Yeah, top five is possible. That's what we're
going
for.
Come on, man. You got it. I believe. So be sure to follow him on Twitter and see where he's at up there. Tsukaime, I'm so glad you were able to come and hang out with us, man. Even with the time difference and everything, it's been great having you on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot
absolutely.
Of fun.
And thank you guys for coming, visiting the Happy Hearthstone, and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.